In this episode, we discuss the exuberantly punctuated A Talking Cat. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Hey, welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Stuart Wellington.
You've been suitably welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Elliot Kalin, the rude one of the bunch.
Mm-hmm. Full of tood.
Full of tood and chicken.
So you're going to be the bad boy today,
Elliot. Oh yeah, I'm the original bad boy that ladies love.
Dan, you want to be, what, the young cute one?
Sure.
Okay.
I'll be the Paul McCartney of the group.
Okay, and that makes me like the kind of artsy one? Mm-hmm. What? The one that's good at math? What?
Yeah, you're the artsy mathlete. Yeah. You're regular.
I mean, they're not mutually exclusive.
You're the physics genius.
Yeah.
That's the other archetype.
Yeah, every boy band has the bad boy, the cute one, and the physics genius.
So this is number...
Who can forget? Just like the Beatles. The core group, John Lennon, Paul McCartney...
And Stephen Hawking.
And young Stevie Hawking. I want to hold your hand.
That's all right. Great. I'm glad.
How is that offensive? That's how he talks. He's a computer.
Mm-hmm. He's a computer.
He's a computer that uses a mannequin to pretend he's a person. We all know the truth behind Stephen Hawking. Let's not fool ourselves.
Blue.
Yeah. No, he's very blue. He's sad because he can never love being a computer.
He'd like to hold your hand, as Elliot just said.
What is exactly. Love?
So, baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more.
I didn't know that was one of his. That was a Beatles song?
That was one of the songs that the Beatles wrote but for someone else.
Okay.
Like that one for the Mamas and Papas.
They forced someone else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
They forced someone else to watch a movie like we did tonight.
Yeah. Oh, boy. What is this podcast about, Dan?
This is a podcast where we watch a bad movie and we talk about it. This is number two in Small Timber. Now, there was some confusion.
No. Small Vember.
No, there was some confusion. There was some confusion whether it was Small Timber or Small Vember, and it could be enhanced by my stupid mouth.
Your mouth is quite dumb.
But the idea...
Where's your mouth's degree from?
It's from Case Western.
Exactly.
So, no, but the very idea of a Small Vember is absurd on its face. Clearly.
There was a small
timber.
Wonder. Why can't there be a small Vember?
No, exactly. That's the month we watch Small Wonder.
You've got Small Timber.
But only in that month.
Dan, there was Small Soldiers, and that's crazy. Below a certain height, a soldier's effectiveness is nil. How can there not be a small...
Not according to that movie. They took on Phil Hartman. They took on Kirsten Dunst. They took on a lot of people.
They took on Phil Hartman and Kirsten... Yeah, I guess they did. They're the bad guys.
So, no.
Spoiler alert.
So, Small Timber...
Small Vember.
Obviously. Followed by... Shocktober, followed by November, which means there's no theme in November.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So, but in...
we only watch Dr. No.
In Small Timber, we watch smaller movies here at the Flophouse.
And watch No Good Deed.
Smallest Boom. Movie.
Boom.
Boom. No Good Deed's a movie.
No what?
Anyway.
No Good Deed, the movie where Idris Elba plays a twist, I think.
Yeah, it's got some kind of shocking twist that I don't know what it is. So Small Vember is when we watch low-budget movies made for smaller by small people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like The Terror of Tiny Town?
Yes, exactly. The only all-midget Western. So last episode we watched God's Not Dead.
Right. And it turned out
all the acting chops
was not dead.
Of Kevin Sorbo.
Which was... I mean, depending on which critics you ask, not a flop really at all. I mean, it was a huge financial success.
Oh, yeah. If you ask God, he says it was the best movie ever.
Mm-hmm. And a huge critical success, I assume, among, I don't know, like church bulletin.
Yeah.
That was the surprising thing. There was a surprising number of critical church reviews of it.
Yeah, because it was not Christian enough.
And not a good movie.
But someone posted on the Flophouse Facebook page like reviews that were negative about it because the argument that the kid makes acknowledges the fact of the Big Bang.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, and evolution. Mm-hmm. So that was not Christian enough, even
that
though it was
sense.
An expressly
But today
Christian
we're watching
film.
A different small movie.
Yep. It was called A Talking Cat?
Talking cat?
A talking cat, huh?
Who ever heard of such a thing?
Because here's the title is a talking cat. What's exclamation point, question mark, exclamation point.
I suppose.
That's
I don't know why your version of the title is so Jewish, Stuart.
That's my Charlie Rango impression.
Charlie Rango?
I guess I'm a lizard cowboy.
I'm a lizard cowboy that represents Harlem in Congress. Charlie Rango. Not to be confused with Charlie Ragu, the congressman who is a spaghetti sauce.
Sounds a little bit like Sylvester Stallone all of a sudden.
Yeah, well, he's also spaghetti sauce in his veins, you know.
Spaghetti sauce.
That's spaghetti sauce.
A talking cat with an interrobang with an extra bang.
So interrobang, is that a porn movie about punctuation? Like the copy editors are checking the newspaper articles late at night, and one thing leads to another.
Yeah.
Well, if there was a pornographic movie, it could have been shot on the set of A Talking Cat.
Because here's the thing. A Talking Cat is a movie that, let's just say right at the top, every scene feels like it risks being about to turn into a porno scene, even the ones between family members. There's just this weird porn tone to the whole thing. And maybe it's just the awkwardness of the acting and the amateurishness of the shooting of the film.
Well, but we can't... So
it spells out porn.
We can't ignore the fact that the director, David DeCocteau, who here was...
DeCocteau, I think it is. DeCocteau. Yeah, he directed Blood of a Poet, Orpheus.
He was... what was the nom de plume he was...
He directed under the name Mary Crawford.
Yeah, but this director had directed a bunch of softcore films, mostly gay softcore films. He did some straight stuff earlier in his career.
But that's not...
Like the straight story?
He's not just a porn director. He's a sleaze director. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I want to say about this movie is that it was made by this is an incredibly amateurish movie that was made by a bunch of actual professionals. Like the director, who's also the guy behind...
He made like 150 movies.
He made Sorority Babes in the Slimeball Bowl-O-Rama. He made Test Tube Teens from the year 2000. Beach Babes from Beyond. A lot of movies about the people are from.
Pre-Hysteria 3.
He made Retro Puppet Master, the movie that readers of The Disaster Artist may recognize as starring room star Greg Sestero. But, like, aside from him, the two main adult leads in this were played by one of the former child stars of,
Family Affair,
the TV show, and also an actress who was Kristen DeBell, who Dan was very excited to find was the star of Alice in Wonderland, an X-rated musical comedy from the 70s. But she was also in Meatballs. She was in, you know, actual movies.
She's had a long, straight career.
Did Meatballs have... Was that the one with the alien, or was that Meatballs 2?
No, that was like 2? Meatballs 4.
That was like 3 years... Yeah, that was
I think it happened soon.
That was later on. Then also, and the music, which we noticed was incredibly terrible, was composed, supposedly, by the same, according to the credits, by the same guy who did the music for the Friday the 13th series.
Holy shit.
Like, he's done a ton of movies. Swamp Thing.
I can't believe that, because it all sounds like library music. It all sounds like MIDI library music, some of which is like sound-alikes for other things.
One of Stewart's favorite movies, Wishmaster, he did the score.
That's easily one of my favorite movies.
Jason X.
There's one piece of music in there that is clearly just It's a Small World After All, tuned down like a step or two.
Yeah, just for public domain purposes. I think this is a lot of people putting in as little time as possible, and no one put in less time.
Eric Roberts.
This big name star, Eric Roberts.
Titular talking cat.
So the talking cat on screen, the talking cat is played by, as the credits say, special guest star, Squeakies. Squeaky? He's a cat named Squeaky who's playing a cat named Duffy.
Special guest star.
His voice is...
on loan from what?
from his owner. Yeah, from the old lady who lives down the street.
Yeah, he's normally starring and sitting around and cleaning himself.
Everybody, the star of Night Court, Squeaky, everybody.
We were very lucky to get... Look, you normally only see him in the litter box, Squeaky. But he's voiced by Eric Roberts, who is a big name star. He was also in a Flophouse film before the Steam Experiment.
A big name star in the children's movie universe.
But he does the voice of the cat in a way that has been described, I think, by others as a man sitting in the bathroom on the phone, doing a first cold read of the script and occasionally just going off and doing whatever he wants.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to necessarily... I mean, if the script didn't say it expressly several times, I don't think that he would know that he was voicing a talking cat.
No, but luckily the character points out to us, the audience, and to every single character, I'm a talking cat.
With every line he reads, you can imagine the bathrobe he's wearing, the like reading glasses lazily sliding down his nose,
the peanut butter and jelly sandwich he's preparing.
You can almost hear the television that's on in the background that he's watching while he does this, does his recording. Like you can almost, like you can almost see the board game he's playing with. I assume a nephew while he does this.
I imagine if it's Mouse Kirk Trap, Roberts,
because he's trying to get into character.
You can hear the wind rush by the car window as he drives somewhere else.
He's reading the options in the Leisure Suit Larry computer game he's playing.
Wow, he's just now getting around to playing Leisure Suit Larry.
No, Eric Roberts, it's his like 10th playthrough.
he loves those
games.
I
like it because it's dirty, but not too dirty.
He's like, look, someday I don't want to use a strategy guide. I'm going to unlock all the boobs myself. As long as there's a set of boobs I haven't seen in this game, I'm going to keep playing it. Thank you, Sierra Software.
Oh, Sierra, what happened to you? Roberta Williams, whither art thou?
Which may bring the question, what happened to Sierra? Why is there not like an Xbox or PlayStation 4 Leisure Suit Larry?
I LucasArts still makes games.
No, they shut LucasArts down.
Yeah, they shut LucasArts down.
What?
What? Sorry, Dan.
Sorry, Dan. This is not
that is like the
out.
One game company you can name.
Oh my God.
No more Maniac Mansion games.
No more Grim Fandango.
Full Throttle 2. Oh, sorry, it's not happening.
But Monkey Island, right?
I'm sorry, Monkey Island was bombed. It's been used as a nuke testing range. All the monkeys are dead.
Anyway,
so this movie is about. So this is the story of a bunch of stock footage of a forest, and also a beach, and also the exterior of a house that is intercut with scenes involving a talking cat. Now,
these are all supposed to be within walking distance of each other, but it appears to be Hawaii, the Pacific Northwest, and the coast
and
of
Southern,
California.
And Southern California. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. The movie never actually suggests that these places are where this movie is taking place. It merely...
It could be anywhere.
It's a real Kuleshov experiment where it just presents you with a location and then cuts to a scene, and it forces you, the viewer, to make the choice that this is where the scene is taking place. We're as complicit in the shitty filmmaking of this movie as anybody. True. So let's.
It's a real indictment.
What he's doing here is like really calling into question the whole artifice of film. Yeah. For if we can't trust a talking cat to tell us the truth, who can we trust?
Mm-hmm.
The slick Hollywood slicksters?
It's like a Michael Haneke movie.
Yeah, Michael Haneke. There are 8 nights of Michael Haneke. Well, there was Funny Games 2. They thought there was
only... Funnier Games,
funnier,
right?
Funny Games 2, Funnier Games. They thought there was only enough...
Violence to fill up one...
A violent, nihilistic shock filmmaking for one night. But no, lo, there were 8 nights. Cache. I guess it's called Cash. Mm-hmm. The White Ribbon.
Yeah. Yeah,
Amore? Was that a Haneke?
Amore, yeah, Michael Haneke.
Keep it going, guys. Wait, how do you say his name?
Haneke.
That's close enough.
No, it is not at all. One sounds like Hanky, and one sounds like Haneke. I'm starting to think all you right, just...
That's the mnemonic I'll use to keep
those. I'm
Johnny
so sad
mnemonic.
At this movie, I'll use my Hanky to wipe my eyes. Michael Haneke. I would never give this movie to my grandma on Hanukkah. Not Michael Haneke. That's how you look. Every German director, there's a mnemonic device for their name. Like Werner Herzog.
Yeah, it's like yeah. This would hurt a hog to have to watch.
This would
that this, grizzly bear would totally hurt a hog.
I'm gonna drive my Hertz rental car to Og. My caveman friend, so we can watch Dieter Needs to Fly. You don't say Herzog. You don't say her wants the Zionist One World Government. You won't say Herzog. That doesn't make sense.
Next time I'm watching Even Dorf Started Small, I remember that.
Even Dorf Started Small? Again, Dan.
He's always been small.
Dwarves.
He's always dwarves. Been small, dude. He's not his dwarf. Shoes are on his knees where his knees would be.
Even Dorf Even Dorf Started
the
Small.
One were Herzog. The one Herzog Conway collaboration. You know, because he was originally supposed to be in Fitzcarraldorf, but then instead he had to back out and they got Klaus Kinski and they lost the Dorf angle.
Aguirre, the Wrath of Dorf.
And of course, Dorf's Ferratu. Oh. So many possible Tim Conway Werner Herzog collaborations. Dan, your inability to pronounce things is the gift that keeps on giving.
It's like Michael Haneke.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
He goes on for eight nights. Anyway.
Anyway. So, a talking cat. Let's talk about the characters, shall we?
They're so memorable.
There's two sets of characters in this movie. There is Phil, a wealthy computer programmer who just sold his company and lives in a crazy decorated house.
He's like a blonde Otho. If there was a spy versus spy, he would be the white spy and Otho would be the black spy.
See, he's a Blotho, which is not a black Otho. It's a blonde Otho.
Yeah.
Now,
he's a fat elderly man, basically.
with a soul patch, so he's cool.
And a certain joie de vivre and a grace that is belied by his portly figure.
Yeah.
Now, he has a son who is probably gay, but instead he expresses
that. He's working
that.
Through his
He
stuff.
Certainly comes off as...
His son Chris expresses that by being a little awkward and also bookish.
Yeah.
When Franny, a girl who's in his school, wants to be tutored by him, but really wants to go out with him.
I think she wants to go out with his swimming pool.
She just,
of her flirting seems to be centered around, like, let's go to the swimming pool.
She's getting tutored in her Hamlet class.
Yeah.
And she's just a little, but each time she's like, hey, can we go swimming before we tutor? Hey, why don't we have today's tutoring session in the pool? Mm-hmm. It does feel like she's just using him for his pool.
Yeah.
And why not? He is, their chemistry doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But there's another family.
Mm-hmm. Down the road.
Down a long walk into a forest preserve.
From a temperate forest to a coniferous forest.
In a walk from the modern family house to what appears to be like a woods
like maybe
bungalow.
Like Falling Waters or some sort of...
It's a Frank Lloyd Wright masterpiece. There's Susan, who is a caterer who just can't make enough money. Shades of Bratz.
Or enough cheese puffs.
She really has to sink a lot of money into these cheese puffs on spec so that she can win a job catering
There's no spec
company.
In those cheese puffs. They're totally vegetarian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She wants to cater for a toy company. Now, she has two children, Tina, a girl who's a computer whiz, but also kind of a couch potato, and she's mean to her brother, Trent, whose main personality trait is that he thinks he lacks imagination, and he knows how to fix things, like a fence, which he fixes for a long time.
He fixes the same part of that fence over and over.
He's a good son, and his mom tells him that a lot, but he just doesn't know what to do with his life. And the fact that he's 16 and doesn't really need to figure out what to do with his life doesn't seem to enter into his stupid head.
Played by first-timer Daniel Danis.
Yeah, that was the thing.
And introducing.
Daniel Danis, who played Trent, was introduced as introducing,
yeah. Yep.
As opposed to all the big stars we
like
know
Athena
and love.
Like Athena erupting from Zeus's skull.
The cat.
That's what happened. Zeus said, and introducing, and then Athena just burst forth, fully formed.
Now the cat got
Somebody
the...
call for a goddess of victory in my Nike form?
Yep. Hephaestus, craft us up a fucking... camera or something and take pictures of this moment. Immortalize it for all of time.
The cat got the character credit, though. The cat was like, and blank as blank.
Yeah, that's
so
the credit you
the
want.
The cat had the good agent when it came to that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, so all these characters have problems that it takes a long time for the movie to communicate with us. Mm-hmm. Phil needs to find something to do with his retirement. His son, Chris...
Has trouble with ladies.
Has trouble picking up signals from ladies.
Needs to learn how to swim, too.
Susan needs to get this catering job, although the cat doesn't really get
Help
into that at
no,
all.
Not really.
Tina needs to get hooked up with Phil so that he can help her with her computer software idea. And Trent needs to learn he has an imagination so he can get an internship at a toy company.
Yeah, I guess. And also, that other lady wants to hook up with the kid, so they're, you know...
Wait, what?
The swimming lady.
Wants to hook up with the kid.
His tutoring student.
So their need's basically the same need.
Now, here's the thing.
Here's the thing. None of these needs are important.
None of them are important, and the characters
are
do a
actual
lot of
problems.
Wandering around. There's a lot of filler in this movie. None better than Stuart and my, I think, favorite scene in the whole movie. When the camera follows a white car driving down a road in multiple shots for an hour? How long do you think?
Driving at a, let's say, leisurely pace.
Like 7 minutes? It is the least suspenseful or exciting car scene since the opening credits to Birdemic. But at least that had like scary music over it.
Now, you're saying you like that padding more than the padding later on in the movie where the app that the teenage girl creates is the idea behind this app is you scan all your clothes and the app suggests a combination of clothes you can wear. And so there's a scene where they are scanning all of their clothes.
They're just scanning the tags on their clothes and it dissolves to somebody else scanning clothes, dissolves back to the first person. This is the dad and the son. They scan clothes.
It's like an 8-minute montage.
At least in that montage, the like subtle ruffling of the clothes kind of allows you to drift off to sleep, kind of.
Well, the thing is, at least that...
Achieve a trance state that, where you can see the Godhead.
That's what happened. If you would know ecstasy, watch a talking cat. Now, here's the thing about that scene. It might have been easier to take if not for the clown circus music over it, because that music is telling
me... Slide whistles and horns.
Slide whistles and woo! And burp, burp. Like, you... It was one step away from just random boing sound effects. What that music is telling me is, this is the zaniest, funniest thing you have ever seen. These people are scanning the tags on their clothes? Has the world gone mad? Oh, boy. It's like a fantasy wonderland, a candy-colored playground for children of all ages.
It's a Fellini-esque dreamscape.
It's a true romp.
It's meant to show the difference between the father and son's relationship at the beginning of the movie, guys,
mm-hmm.
and their relationship now where they're having a ton of fun scanning in clothes.
Finally join together in an activity they both can enjoy.
Now,
kind of hanging out in a den area.
In a hallway outside a door. Now, we've gone a long way without talking about the talking cat, Duffy, who is a stray cat who wanders around, and he's like the Incredible Hulk in the TV show. He just wanders into people's lives and fixes them. Here's the thing. Does he talk? Usually he just thinks out loud in a kind of Garfield way, but...
And we hear it.
And all the way do we hear it. We hear
his internal monologue.
We hear every soliloquy about how much he loves the woods and hates what he calls beeping machines, which sometimes seem to mean phones and sometimes mean computers.
Yeah.
The thing is, Elliot, the line is blurred between those two things.
That's true. More and more these days. What is a phone but a computer in your pocket? And what is a book but a movie in your mind?
But but all of his monologues seem to be like a combination of pseudo-poetic dialogue that has been written for Eric Roberts, and maybe Eric Roberts just improvising whatever he's thinking about at the time.
Yeah. Or it's him having cryptic conversations with the people, like a regular Confucius.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But he can. Here's the rules about being a talking cat. He can only talk out loud to each person once, I guess, in their lifetime. He can have one conversation per person. Yeah. So he's got.
So he's going to use it to help someone get an internship.
And here's the thing. Also, when he talks, do they animate his mouth sloppily so that it looks like a black void is just opening on his face? Yes, they do.
It's like they have
like flies from the pit of hell should be flying out.
Does it look like possibly we are staring into the abyss every time the cat opens his mouth and risking madness?
Everything we've learned about this world, three dimensions, everything goes out the window. The world is now flat and time and space is torn open so that his knowledge can pour forth.
That mathematically should not exist. It uses non-Euclidean geometry from some horrible, unspeakable nth dimension.
And I want to say something about this cat.
Go ahead. It's your podcast, man. Who's stopping you?
You might think...
The cat is the one normally doing the talking. Now Dan's doing the talking about the talking cat.
In this case, Dan is the talking cat.
So... They make
a talking Dan.
They make a whole movie about a talking cat.
I think one movie is questionable, but also I think maybe a fifth of the film is about the cat. Right. The rest is about characters finding things to do on a Sunday.
They name what they charitably call a movie about a talking cat after this talking cat, and you would think that the titular talking cat, that must be some charming cat.
Oh, now, he must be like a dapper or a wisecracking guy, you know.
Here's what I'll say about this. Elliot, I know, not a fan of cats. He's allergic to them. I understand.
Look, it's not that I'm not a fan. Biology has doomed me to find them uncomfortable.
No, but you've got reasons to hold a grudge against cats.
Oh, do I ever.
Stuart and I, both cat
I
owners.
Find them less than perfect.
Perfect.
I like it.
In fact, in my contract, there's a... claws.
Let's pause these interruptions.
Tail? Okay, go ahead.
I'm just to cut to
you
the chase.
You out cat puns me, sir. What a catastrophe.
Cut to the chase, which is probably a cat chasing a mouse. The this cat is not a charming cat.
Forget
no,
it,
not
Elliot.
At all.
This is one of the least charismatic cats I've seen.
And you
in
like
anything.
Cats. Dan is ready to give any cat the benefit of the doubt. Let's just say something about Dan's cat. Dan's cat is an asshole. Dan's cat is a mean-spirited, glaring cat.
Who, I mean, she loves me.
She loves you. Yes. But otherwise, because you're, I guess, curmudgeons in across species lines. Yeah. But she is a cat who is very unpolite. Let's just say that. But you love her. You're willing to look past
her. We have a bond.
Her. You love Garfield, who, let's face it, also an asshole.
I don't love Garfield.
Heathcliff, no good, terrorizing the neighborhood. Sure. You love him.
What about Riff Raff?
Riff Raff, well, ironically, for a member of a junkyard gang, is very polite and well-behaved and clean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, moving
where
on
are
to Sylvester.
Are you complaining about Squeaky the Cat being...
Cat Power, also, you know, fun.
And Cat
songs.
Dennings, you love. Anyway,
sure,
so let's just say this. The cat doesn't have Zazz, It, Pow,
no.
Glam.
Cat Stevens.
Moxie.
It doesn't have Cat Stevens, is what I was saying.
This cat does not sing folk songs or convert to Islam.
No. It is a unpleasant cat that is clearly just there... because they have lured it with tuna and with laser
and
pointers.
Stuart pointed out, quick-eyed Stuart pointed out, Slylock Fox over there pointed out
that Nudie Dutch Stuart over here.
Yeah, you're Max Mouse, and I'm, I guess, the explanation at the end that tells you what the mystery was.
You're Sneaky Weasel or whatever.
Thanks.
Whatever the fucking thing is.
Sneaky Weasel, my second favorite Swedish sex position.
But Stuart pointed out that there's a scene where the cat is supposed to be hanging around some shoes, and you can clearly see the laser pointer they're using to keep the cat interested in shoes. Here's an example of the illogic in the movie. The mom, the cat.
What's illogical is that they didn't just fill those shoes with like tuna or something. Cats love that stuff.
They
don't need a laser.
Garbage. Rub that cat, those shoes with catnip. The cat will go gaga over.
Hide it in the toe. You don't have to see a laser zipping around there.
Here's the thing. The catering mom is introduced to us looking for her shoes. She can't find them. Her son goes, there they are, and points. There's a cutaway of shoes. Oh, as if they're in the same room that the rest of them are.
Sure.
She goes,
they could be anywhere.
There are my shoes. She walks outside where her shoes are, and the cat is at them. They're like, who's that cat? I don't know. And she walks away to work. Her shoes have never made it onto her feet. She's just walking to work in her stockings, barefoot. I don't know.
I have expected the shot of the shoes to have, like, a blizzard coming down around it.
There's so many shots in this movie that don't
like the shoes are flying around in outer space.
So many shots don't appear to be happening in the same place. Even when you finally get a two shot between two people, most of a scene will just be a shot with one character, then a reverse of the other character, then another character, like back and forth.
The best is the moment when two characters are supposed to shake hands, and then you can like almost feel the movie being like, oh, I don't know what to do.
Two characters in one shot? Can we do that?
Let's say, you know what, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to give the director the benefit and say, this is an homage to Orson Welles' film of Othello, which, because it was shot over a long period of time on multiple continents and with different actors at different times because of budget reasons and scheduling reasons, often the scenes are done in one shots and don't quite match up. Perhaps he said, aha, I'll take the master's aesthetic and I'll apply it to my shitty movie about a talking cat. Because here's the thing. I don't know why they made this movie.
Yeah.
I don't understand. This is a movie where you're watching and you're like, I can't fathom the reason. It goes a step beyond.
Maybe it's for cat lovers. We've already covered that. Cat lovers don't care for them.
No, because they love cats, not this ragamuffin.
This unpleasant.
This scroungy beast that appears to like a cat. There's one shot of Duffy, the cat, walking out of a sliding door that's just close up of his butthole, basically, and it's like,
I think,
even a cat
I think
lover doesn't need to look in a cat's rectum.
I'm pretty sure you get that shot like three
staring
times
at the
in this movie.
You stare into the cat's butt, and the cat's butt stares into you, as Nietzsche said. Anyway.
And you think, is that a hot dog end? No, it's the butt of a cat.
Oh, I took it too far. Now, here's the thing. I said here's the thing a bunch of times. When we saw Food Fight, I said, what's scary about this is that this makes sense to someone. I don't even think that's true about a talking cat.
Yeah, I don't know who packaged this deal. Who was like, David Ducacteau.
You're giving his name way more credit.
What do you think it is?
I'll tell you what it is. I'm not even going to think. I'll look it up. His name is David Ducacteau. There's no cocktail.
What we need is you. Well, all right. What we're going to do is we're going to take you, a gay porn softcore director.
We're going to call him a sleaze master.
Sleaze master David D. Whatever. We're going to
give him a lot of credit here.
He's basically the poor man's Jim Wynorski, Harold Blueberry. You know?
We're going to put you with a child star from a 70s TV show and
60s.
A 60s TV show and a pornographic actress from the Alice film. We're going to make a talking cat movie where the cat is Eric Roberts and kids are going to eat this shit up. We're going to toss it on to Netflix, direct to DVD, direct to streaming. Direct to steaming pile of crap.
It's going to steam right there on your own TV. Here's my guess. Everyone involved in this movie was kidnapped by aliens. The aliens brainwashed them into thinking, not remembering how a movie is.
Erased the idea of what a movie is.
The hope was that this would destroy filmmaking forever. Sure. Because I guess the aliens are vulnerable to the magic of the movies. So this would destroy cinema and thus pave the way for an alien invasion.
The aliens are all the bad guys from Last Action Hero or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, as long as the people watch movies, their power is gone. So that's my only guess, is that some kind of non-human intelligence edited and was behind this film.
Now, we haven't...
Maybe a computer gained sentience and decided to make a movie, and this was it.
We haven't really gone through the plot of the movie, but the thing is, we can't. Because the thing is, basically the plot of this movie is all these people did not really have problems, and then a cat came into their life and solved their non-problems.
A cat had a cryptic conversation with them and gave them some pretty obvious advice. Their problems were solved. The cat gets hit by a car.
Yeah, that's the big
finish.
The big finish, the cat gets hit by a car. And they have to find his magic.
In a terrifying scene where we see first a black car driving at a medium speed, and then the sound of screeching tires and a cat's cat squeal.
It's a squeak. It's Squeaky the cat.
Yeah, the car driving fast was shot with the same skill as the many, as Elliot pointed out, day for night scenes where they just had like a weird
the day for night scenes. Holy shit!
It's amazing. So at nighttime, everything is bright blue and windows are fully like brightly lit. In some ways, brighter. Yeah,
like a nuclear bomb is outside.
This is my alien theory all over, because every room looks like at night fire in the sky is going on right behind. The mothership is landing and there's huge beams of light coming through.
You know, there's
a little kid's gonna open a door like in Close Encounters. There's just gonna be light coming through.
I recently watched Lawrence of Arabia, and there's some day for night scenes in the desert that.
They'll look great.
Day for night never looks totally convincing.
But that, I need to give that movie credit again. I apologize, Lawrence of Arabia, for looking at you slightly worse.
I apologize. One of the best movies ever made.
Your day for night scenes are better than a talking cat.
You know what? I think David Lean, maybe you're right. Maybe I owe you an apology, David Lean. You are better than the director of Bikini Goddesses or what was some of the other ones that he made? Hold on.
I don't know.
So we have a cat that gets hit by a car. They put him in like a mummy costume.
This cat is clearly still totally fine. They've just thrown a couple bandages. Yeah,
the best part is that they say the veterinarians made him as comfortable as possible by dressing him like fucking Dengar.
He's how else are you going to show that a cat is dying than by lightly draping a bandage over his face?
And letting him roll around on a bed for a minute. As if the cat doesn't know where he's at, dude.
Well, the problem is they shot the film out of sequence. Yeah. So the cat forgot he was supposed to be injured in that scene. So here's the thing.
And so the people make a huge logical leap.
They say perhaps the only thing that can save him is his magic collar that he hid in a grove of trees somewhere. So let's walk through the forest in groups looking for this collar. And
your description sounds ridiculous, but that's literally as much time as the movie takes to describe this.
Yeah. And they're like, might as well try it. We're going to do it.
So they do. They find the collar. They put it on the cat. There are some very cheap computer laser effects.
Mm-hmm.
And the cat's okay.
Hooray, everybody.
And everyone's problems are solved. The little the girl's software makes a lot of money.
Eric Roberts explains all this.
The caterer gets the job catering for the toy company thanks to a new big investor in the toy company. It's Phil, the dad.
All the tutor romances
and his girlfriend are in a pool. And I guess Trent gets that internship. They don't really show much of him at the end.
They don't talk about Trent. There is a... You know, one of the great things about that final montage is when they just show...
Yeah, montage is loosely used here.
The son, I don't remember his name, frolicking in the pool with his pool girlfriend.
Chris, I think.
Franny, the pool girl. Mm-hmm. And they're just like swimming back and forth without going underwater. And she, for some reason, she just says, cannonball? But at no point does anybody jump into the pool.
They never do. Oh, that was one of his problems. I forgot. He didn't know how to swim. And so Trent had to teach him how to swim. Which, again, felt like a setup for a gay porn scene, and that never happened. Yeah. But she just goes cannonball, and then they keep just kind of dog paddling around.
Which doesn't make any sense at all. That's not a cannonball.
She's just
talking. As a party animal, you're very upset about that.
Here's my explanation.
I was hoping that the talking cat, would then do a cannonball into the water.
Yeah, and go, party! Mm-hmm. You were hoping it would end like that talking dog movie that Chevy Chase did the voice for?
Oh, and then
Karate Dog?
Hold on.
No, but here's my explanation of Cannonball. We didn't see it in the scene because they cut in too late, but the guy said, hey, what was the song that got cut out of the state DVDs because they couldn't get the music clearance rights? And she went, Cannonball? He's like, yeah, that's right, Cannonball. Mm-hmm. They had to cut it out of that sketch.
That's probably what happened.
What were you going
to
say, Dan?
No, well, then I just wanted to... I didn't want us to pass over the fact that then when the credits happen, they do... character shots for all the characters, and it's like three shots from the movie, but all of the shots of the different characters are the most boring shots of these characters.
Looking
at something or reacting to something or listening to something. I mean, all of these shots.
One of my favorite shots
in, like,
was the...
one of two buildings. So.
And a couple of, like, one of them had just happened seconds before where the woman was feeding the father cheese puffs
and then patting his gut.
Well, I mean, he's an older guy. I can only assume a widower.
Look, man,
well, he says
not everyone gets fat.
When they meet, he said. Sure. When they meet, he said. She goes. Oh, I have two. I have twins. Oh, is your husband around? Oh, I'm not married. I never was. That goes without comment, which I guess is very liberal.
They're fucking
in the movie.
Midichlorian babies.
The Lord put them in me. And and then he goes, oh, well, you know, it's awkward. My wife left me with my son. And so his wife, I guess, got tired of being married to this goofball. This goofball.
He's a workaholic, I think.
We never even mentioned, like, the cat somehow uses his magic to put an article on the girl's computer about Phil's software company.
On the blinking machine was
on
it
the
called?
Blinking on the beeping machine.
Well, and it's like all caps, like sand.
So he understands the concept of a machine, but he doesn't know what a computer is.
He doesn't. He's kind of part caveman, but a cave cat. But the which is would have been a great Hanna-Barbera character. But the. The article
it's like a spear tooth, basically.
Yeah, exactly. The article starts out being about this guy selling his company and retiring, and then the next paragraph is the description of a classified ad. It's like, I don't understand. Is the cat just making this up whole cloth out of nothing, and he doesn't really understand how articles work? Because I buy it. A cat doesn't read a lot of magazines. Even Cat Fancy is not really for cats.
No.
You know?
So we should skip to final judgments, whether this was a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie we kind of like. I'm going to go, I say this is a good, bad movie. It gets a little rough going, but if you're watching it with people, like, it is absurdly...
It is an hour and 23 minutes, and it starts to drag around the hour mark.
Yeah, but it is absurdly...
It has third act problems.
Yeah.
Like the Marvel movies.
But then, right.
It has first, second,
if you
and third
like the
problems.
Marvel movies, you'll probably like
if
this.
If you like the Avengers, you'll love a talking cat.
Yeah, but then right at the point where you might be getting tired, then the cat gets injured and all that craziness happens. So I say it's a funny movie to watch. It's bad.
You know what, Dan? I never thought we'd agree on anything, but I'm going to agree with you. This is the goodest of the bad movies. It was a delight most of the time in how stupid it was and bad. Don't watch it alone because you'll wonder how your life came to this. Watch it with a friend.
You'll be found dead in a pool of your own vomit.
Yep. It'll be ruled a justified suicide.
Who's going to rule it? Judge fucking Harry?
Judge Death, I guess. Judge Harry.
Judge Depp, the bad guy from fucking Judge Dredd?
Bring up the next case, Mac.
And they just wheel in a body with a sheet over it.
Oh, a talking cat? Oh, okay.
Oh, this body was found dead watching a talking cat. Well, there's no plaintiff or defendant here, but I guess it's
case
just...
dismissed. Throw him away and lock up the key.
Bring in the next case. It's another body under a sheet, but it's Dan Fielding and a babe. Night court.
Steel, what do you have to say?
No, you guys are both right. It is a good bad movie. It is the type of thing that I would normally hope to watch more of here.
Yes.
In this flop house of ours.
If every flop house movie was like this one, this would be a joy as opposed to the grueling torture that it is.
It's Stu, before we...
Knives in my ding-dong.
The Stuart Wellington story.
Before we move on.
An A&E, a Lifetime original movie.
And then they came
movie.
For my ding-dong.
Not without my ding-dong. The Castle Freaks tale.
Unauthorized, the ding-dong story. before we move on, Stuart, I believe you have a few words to say regarding our Yonkers live show on October the 18th.
Dan, I'm bonkers over our Yonkers live show.
Were those the words you needed to say?
What I'm going to say, guys, is that if you are listening to this, you should immediately go and check out our website, flophousepodcast.com.
Yeah.
Where we have information about our upcoming live show on
October 18th.
October 18th.
Saturday.
October 18th.
Shocktober Scaredteenth.
Okay. And that's at the Yonkers Draft House up in Yonkers, New York.
Well, Alamo Draft House.
It's the Alamo Draft House in Yonkers, New York. Thank you, Elliot, for fixing what I just said. and the big information is that we are actually sending some party buses up there. Party buses that are going to be picking people up at Charlene's Bar at 353 Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. And they're going to be taking people up to the show and then bringing people back. And tickets are $26. And
now, this does not include a ticket to the show.
Does not include a ticket to the show. More information, because I am totally fucking this up because I've had a couple of beers.
So basically, if you're looking for a more expensive way to get to Yonkers and don't want to see the show...
Yeah,
I guess you could buy
a ticket. That's
good. Could also just operate as a bus.
I will say that, like, if you're coming to the show, if you've got tickets to the show... $26 back
actually,
and forth from Yonkers
pretty good.
Is a pretty cheap thing.
Much cheaper than a car would be and probably cheaper than a train would be or equivalent.
So,
and if you want to see us in our like post-show exhaustion where we don't want to talk to anyone and we're dead to the world, totally ride on the bus with us.
Or our
Yay.
Pre-show prep mode where we also don't want to talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. Just kidding. We're going to have fun on those buses.
Yay.
And guess what? You can get a drink at Charlene's before and after. The best bar in Brooklyn, I think so.
Yeah, and you can also get drinks and food at the Alamo Draft House. So what were you going to say, Elliot?
So Stuart, what was that again?
So go to the Flophouse podcast website. And the link is at the very bottom of the page, and we accept PayPal for this.
The first bus sold out very fast, so if you're listening to this early on, hie thee to the website, and maybe you'll get on the second bus.
Get on the bus. That's what the Spike Lee movie was about, right? Mm-hmm. Going to Yonkers to see us talk about I Know Who Killed Me?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, October 18th, Alamo Draft House. I Know Who Killed Me, with us, the Flophouse Gang.
And guests.
Get on the bus.
I also want to remind people about the Song of the Autumn contest, where you take audio from previous episodes of the Flophouse, turn them into a catchy tune. Put your song up on SoundCloud so we can embed it on our site, and then send us a link.
It's like YouTube for songs.
Now, I think I may have given the wrong email address last time. I think I may have said flophousepodcast@gmail.com when I think it actually might be theflophousepodcast@gmail.com.
Did you look this up?
Even more of an ungainly thing.
Did you double check this and maybe write it down so you can read it right now?
Well, I'm doing it now. But so if you send it to one.
I just thought it was funny that you were like, I think I did it wrong last time. I think it's the flophousepodcast.com.
Try Flophouse Podcast number one.
If you send it to one, try the other. But the one way that I know that you'll get it to us is if you go to our website, flophousepodcast.com, click on contact, the contact
That'll take
tab.
You to Dan's favorite Jodie Foster movie.
If you put it in that, then I will get the message.
So the best way to submit a song for the Song of the Autumn contest is to go through
the website.
Through the Flophouse website.
The contact link on the website.
Flophousepodcast.com.
Yeah.
When you're ready to make your song, that's basically all. Anywho.
Yeah. And so the deadline to get songs in.
You could
in,
just make R-O-C-K in the USA sure, the way I did it. Yeah.
It's going
to
win.
A reminder that the deadline to get songs in is October the 1st. The winning song we played at the end of the episode of our show that drops November 1st, and the winner will get a T-shirt and get to pick a movie for us to discuss. Full rules for the contest are also available on the aforementioned website, flophousepodcast.com. So that ends the announcement.
Go to the
segment.
Website.
Some good announcements. We got the show in Yonkers, October 18th. Get on the bus, sign up on the website. And while you're on the website, submit your Song of the Autumn contest entry.
Yeah. But now, it's the next segment, which is called
What's that?
Letters from Listeners.
Letters from Listeners.
Letters. Oh. From, letters, wait, were you going to say
Listeners? Yeah.
I feel like we touched a magical skull and we switched bodies for a second.
Oh, no. And then we touched the skull again. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, to continue.
You both peed on a magical skull.
And then the owner of the museum that the skull was in chased us out. Listeners, send some letters. Listeners, go and getters. I appreciate the ambition it took to write that letter and slip it in a book.
Maybe then group vocals for the
you'd
course,
use it for as a bookmark for a while. You'd forget to mail it till you saw it and smiled. That's right, there's my letter as a listener, and I'll mail it to the Flophouse. So I'm not listening, I'm talking in text. What's next? It's a letter from you, the listener who
this
sent the letter. What's this letter gonna be?
Oh, wow. He's discovering more stuff.
We're at the moment of maximum potential. Anything can happen. Maybe we shouldn't open the store. Leave it as a mystery. Let's not collapse everything so that all the events stop being possibilities and instead the waveform goes into one thing.
Really, like
Schrodinger's letter. At this moment, we have to assume that the letter's both pro and con, love and hate. Says it all. Okay. Maybe there's eight letters in the
letters.
Box. Schrodinger's
no
letter box from the listeners okay, to the Flophouse
all right,
tonight.
All right, well, this letter is from...
Did you intend on doing a Schrodinger's letter box
I
in
never
the Talking Cat episode?
Good point. Schrodinger had to assume that the cat was both talking and not talking.
And that at some point... There would be a podcast about garbage and his movie, A Talking Cat.
Now, people rarely talk about the Schroeder's cat experiment, oh, in which you have to assume that the cat or Beethoven is in the box.
Sure. This letter.
But that's a huge dog. How would he fit in a box?
This letter's from Chartex.
What if Schroeder wasn't a family musician, Beethoven, but of the dog Beethoven? Totally different spin on the character.
All the symphonies crafted by the dog Beethoven.
This letter's from Chartex, last name withheld.
Chartex?
I hope I haven't read it before. It goes like this. Ahoy, floppers. I dearly adore the finely tuned comedic makeup of your podcast. Stuart's salty charisma. Elliot's brainy, hilarious interjections.
Thank you.
Dan. It seems to me that the three of you are the most qualified professionals to put the finishing touch on my cinematic bell curve concept. Allow me to explain. If we were to visualize the entirety of movie history as an enormous bell curve of quality, we'd see the vast majority of movies from really terrible to quite good falling in the big swelling middle. At the rightmost tip, we'd place those few movies that managed to not just be great, but more than the sum of their parts. Take The Godfather. Director, cast, composer, cinematographer, etc., are somehow all simultaneously at their career best, thereby producing a 1 in a million instance of cinematic perfection. All the way over the leftmost tip of a curve are movies like The Room and Birdemic, which transcend mere badness by suggesting a production which every single decision made, big or small, was the wrong one. These movies stand out because failure this complete is as statistically unlikely as the total across the board success at the other end of the curve. Here's where you come in. What movie represents 5.0 on this scale? There are countless films clustered near the center of the bell curve, but only one can represent the absolute dead center, a movie with nothing whatsoever to nudge it into the good or bad halves, but which instead stands as an avatar of perfect cinematic beigeness. I'll defer to your expertise. Whichever film you anoint will be the example I forever place at the center of the cinematic bell curve. See you on the flippity flop, Chartex.
Wow, before we answer that, I just want to say, Dan, you did a great job reading that letter.
You did a fantastic job.
I think that the key is neither of you interrupted me.
The vocal exercises were that you did before the show were probably really positive.
I heard no stumbles, no mumbles, no jumbles, no crumbles.
Thanks, guys.
You missed. You avoided all four of the bad umbles.
I would say, just on the outset. To answer this question is going to be tough because it's going to be the most bland thing. So it probably fell out of my head.
Yeah, it's probably a movie we didn't bother. It's probably a movie like I Love Trouble with Julia Roberts and Nick Nolte that no one remembers.
Yeah.
Because why would you? Or like The Paper, you know, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like The Paper.
Okay, well then maybe that's a 5.3.
Okay.
Well, maybe it's like, maybe Beethoven. We mentioned it before.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty mediocre, kind of nothing bland movie.
Or like a Runaway Bride, maybe. How about that?
I mean, that was a huge movie.
It was a huge hit, but like, it's not.
Does anyone remember?
It was a huge hit because it was so great, right?
Yeah, that's how it usually works. Yeah, or maybe like
Conspiracy Theory.
Multiplicity is a little bit is not a five. That's less than that. This is speaking as someone who attended the New York premiere, Dan.
How was the Q&A after that premiere?
There was none.
Oh, that's terrible.
Nobody wanted to be associated with the film. There are a lot of movies that fit this, but yeah, it's hard to think of them because they – like One True Thing with Meryl Streep and Renee Zellweger, maybe that fits as a five, you know?
I don't even remember that.
That's the one
exists.
Where Meryl Streep is dying of cancer. Renee Zellweger is her daughter.
Mm.
It was shot in Maplewood, New Jersey, the town my dad lives in.
The Other Sister.
No, again, that's less than a five.
Milk Money.
Milk Money, maybe, yeah.
I'm just naming movies that exist on the periphery of my memory.
Yeah, you're trying to like unfocus your brain like a magic eye painting.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are paintings, right?
Yeah, they're paintings. Yeah, exactly. They're all hand painted. Rembrandt invented them, yeah. if you stare long enough at Aristotle contemplating a bust of Homer and just unfix your eyes, a dolphin shows up.
Yeah, so like a goofy panther.
So I don't know, like Brother Bear, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
A goofy panther.
Bitch.
Yeah, Rembrandt was thinking of Freddy Krueger.
Freddy fan. He's a member of the Freddy fan club.
Mm-hmm. That thing
who can
do.
Forget Rembrandt's portrait
of
Freddy?
How about That Thing You Do?
Yeah, That Thing You Do could be like a 5.1, you know?
Yeah. Something objectionable about it, but I don't really particularly remember.
But it's like, is there anyone whose favorite movie is That Thing You Do? No, of course not. Would you ever go out of your way to watch it?
What
no.
What about Home Fries?
yeah, maybe.
Vince Gilligan, by the way, man.
Or like Fever Pitch. Yeah. Maybe Fever Pitch, that could be one.
Yeah, sure.
Like
Wasn't enough.
Or you know what? Trouble with the Curve.
Ah, there you go.
I think I'd call that a five.
Trouble with the Curve.
That's a movie where literally I had no interest in seeing it particularly,
mm-hmm.
but one day I was on vacation with my wife. We were really tired. She wanted to take a nap. It happened to be on TV. I started watching it roughly 40 minutes in.
Just happened first time. And first time writer, long time fan.
And I just finished watching it. And I was like, you know what? I wasn't mad at that movie, but did I particularly like it? No.
Ironically, Trouble with the Curve, straight down the middle.
Boom. High five me, bro.
Sports.
Sports. So now, David, write in and tell us why that's an amazing movie.
Okay. Moving on. Dear Flop Team, on the morning of the wedding of my one of my...
on the movie of my wedding.
On the movie. On the morning.
It's called Rachel Getting Married.
On the morning of the wedding of one of my best
weddings.
It was.
He and I and our other like-minded friends gathered in my basement to partake in something we had done numerous times over the course of our friendship.
Shrooms.
We watched a monster movie. Not just any monster movie.
Hey, we watched a monster movie
Deep Star
the morning
6?
Before my wedding.
Yeah, Piranha 3D. We watched Head of the Family. This wasn't just a symbolic goodbye, but also a physical one as well. As that night, my friend the groom was hopping on a plane with his newly minted missus to fly to New Zealand to start their new life together. We ate burritos.
As hobbits.
We ate burritos and watched as the hero didn't heed the VHS clamp box warning and messed with the head.
Oh, you know how you're going to end up.
Yep. and if it wasn't for the recommendation of the Team Flophouse, we would have probably not had this masterpiece to send my friend off on his new life with.
I think Stuart gets the credit.
This leads me to my questions.
What I've been waiting my whole life for.
On several episodes of your hilarious podcast, the figure of Joe Bob Briggs has repeatedly been referenced by the Floppers. Joe Bob, specifically as hosting of TNT's Monster Vision, was the defining television personality of my childhood. He was the first person I can remember seeing on TV who I knew was on my side. If something sucked, he told me so. When the TNT censors so shamefully scissored out all the best parts of the movies, I could feel his anger. Monster Vision was the place I saw what would become my favorite movies, Phantasm 2, In the Mouth of Madness, Return of the Living Dead, and many more. Do you feel the Flophouse is the natural evolution of these late-night horror programs? While you don't exclusively cover horror films, I found several of my new favorite movies have either been recommendations or subjects of the Flophouse. Movies like Bratz and Castle Freak. The three Floppers.
Pretzel Freak. Pretzel Freak. That guy loves pretzels.
That's German for a freak for pretzels.
Yeah.
That's English for freak for pretzels, too.
The three Floppers plus Cat, it seems like Joe Bob Briggs, are on the side of the movie-going public. And without you guys, I wouldn't have such wonderful memories to share with my closest friends.
Membranes?
said membranes.
Such wonderful membranes.
Oh, boy.
We used to pick membranes with my father.
Like mucous membrane, John Constantine's band.
That's close enough to end it.
Well, that's really nice. Thank you and for the credit.
I would love to think that we're Joe Bob Briggs for the new generation.
I don't think we are, but I would love to. Again, that would be a huge honor.
I mean, I more feel like we're USA Up All Night. For the new generation.
I think we're more kept in video of the new generation if it's the USA.
Basically,
thing.
Every time I see Christina from the Alamo Draft House up in Yonkers, she basically just tells me about different screenings that Joe Bob Briggs shows up to, and I feel bad about myself.
Oh, I wish I was at any of those. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was a big influence on all of us, I assume.
Yeah.
And watching Monster Vision was definitely the closest I was ever gonna get to like getting to watch like Zachary or something, you know, the real classic monster movie chiller host.
I mean, I think that we all appreciate the simultaneously ironic and genuine appreciation of trash.
Yeah, yeah. That he really liked these things, but he could also make fun of them.
And I think like through him, I was introduced to Joe Lansdale, who I love. Mm-hmm. And then back to Don Cascarelli again.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, similar to the writer of the letter. Like there are a ton of movies that I saw for the first time on Monster Vision. And was intrigued enough by them to then go see them, not on Monster Vision, and see the blood and the boobs and everything.
And it's too bad because I've really looked for other reviewers who are able to provide that same kind of viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And the closest I can get is like that the horror review site Arrow in the Head, which is even that is not quite good enough. It's like a weirdly like frat boyish type.
Yeah, and I feel like that gives things a pass a little bit too much sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, there are unique individuals in the history of the world, and Joe Bob Briggs is one of them.
Yeah.
Good old JBB. Anyway, moving on. Congratulations to Elliot on the recent addition to the most noble and ancient House of Flop. As it happens, my daughter, first name withheld, last name withheld, was born late January.
Probably wise.
I propose that to finally seal the House of Flop with a venerable last name withheld clan, we contract now to marry these two sometime in early 2032. Maybe it could be a special episode
still
of the Flop
pretty
House.
Young to get married.
By way of a dowry, I can offer $350 and a DVD copy of Goodfellas that's so old you have to flip it over halfway through the movie.
I remember that edition.
Around the time Karen blows
it's not
Henry
even a
in the
long
kitchen.
Movie.
Anyway, I hope to hear from you soon. P.S. My wife doesn't know I'm doing this, so please try and keep it on the DL till the papers are signed. Ben, last name withheld.
Well, Ben, it's an intriguing offer, and I'll take it under consideration. I want, you know, my son to have a little bit of choice in his own bride, but also, if we're still doing this podcast in 2032, something's gone wrong.
Yeah, I don't think you can pass
so
that.
So that money
dowry.
Sounds
if
pretty
I
good.
If I'm a 50-year-old man, and I'm sitting here with you two yabos, just watching crappy movies. Actually,
yep, watching,
pretty,
at that point, it'd be
great.
Fucking
sounds
space
pretty,
movies.
Sounds magical.
Yeah, we're watching space movies in the Astro House.
Yeah, we're like jacking on to the interwebs.
Chairs doing this podcast. That sounds kind of...
Actually, that'd be pretty great. Now I have a wormy boner. I have become.
I keep it in a jar on my desk. Crab keeper.
We have become that which we mocked. Actually, that sounds pretty good. I hope we are doing this in 18 years.
All right. Well, a quick final letter from Mark, middle name withheld, Morris. And he says, Ding Dong Gate is dead. The running argument of whether
ding dong,
or not
the ding dong gate is dead. Ding dong gate. The ding dong gate. Yeah, et cetera.
The running argument of whether or not the Castle Freak rips his own ding dong off has been answered, and I took the straightforward problem solving skills of my 15-year-old son to do it. For new listeners, Ding Dong Gate started many episodes ago with Stewart's insistence that there is a ding dong ripped off in his oft-recommended movie Castle Freak. Well, no, I mean, there is a ding dong ripped off. Your insistence was that the Castle Freak ripped his own ding dong off.
I insisted that, yeah.
Yeah. Other listeners, including Dan, have stated that there is no ripping off of a ding dong in Castle Freak. Even so, the controversy continued. To settle this dispute, my 15-year-old son, Chase, sent this tweet to Stuart Gordon, the director of Castle Freak. I have a question. Does the Castle Freak rip his own ding dong off? Yes or no? Stuart Gordon replied, no.
I love that Stuart Gordon deigns to reply to that.
Stuart Wellington, when presented with this answer.
A tweet using the word ding dong.
Stuart Wellington, when presented with this answer, replied only with, God damn it. Thus ending Ding Dong Gate forever. In the future, we should all take lessons from this young man. When we have a problem or a question, go directly to the source. Now that Ding Dong Gate is settled, we
finally
can turn...
rested, and it's now that its work on this earth is done, Ding Dong Gate can ascend to heaven.
Now that this long national nightmare is over, we can turn our attention fully to answering this age-old question: does the Crypt Keeper have intact genitals?
And what would happen if Penny met a dinosaur?
Yeah.
So no. I think that kid, if he doesn't win a Pulitzer, then the system is corrupt.
Yeah.
Then I don't even know what to believe anymore.
This is some Robert Carroll level.
This is the
some active killing style stuff.
He is the Woodward and Bernstein of Ding Dong Gate. Mm-hmm. And I'm just glad that this fine investigative reporting took place. Thank you, Chase.
Yeah. I'm kind of at a loss for words. It's been a very difficult day. this news broke this morning. My wife was frustrated because I kept ignoring her while she tried to talk to me. And I'm like, no, honey, I have to deal with
this. Stuart Gordon has weighed in on a very important matter.
Yeah, and, Stuart Gordon has betrayed me.
It's been really difficult. You know, I feel like I've really supported Stuart Gordon.
Oh, that was a weird beeping, huh?
Your beeping machine is going off.
Sorry.
So I've recommended a lot of his movies. You go on to Amazon. His movies are often paired with Head of the Family.
And Invisible Maniac.
If it's paired with Invisible Maniac, I'll be shocked because that movie only exists on YouTube right now.
Now, Stuart, how are you going to handle this? Are you going to take some time to reflect? Maybe spend some time with your family? Are you going into a ding-dong ripping off seeing rehab of some kind?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that. I don't think that exists. I feel like I need to go on some kind of a vision quest where instead of seeing a guy rip off his own ding-dong, I just see a ding-dong maybe grow back. I don't know.
Your spirit animal is a healthy ding-dong.
Yeah.
Well, Stuart, God bless you.
Maybe I'll get that on a pendant around my neck.
Mm-hmm. I hope you find solace in this time, dark time.
Sure, maybe
know?
A tattoo.
Sure.
If you got
like
a tattoo
a fish?
Of the Castle Freak ripping his own ding dong off, and then underneath it was tattooed, "You're wrong, Gordon." You took a picture of that and sent it to him. I guess he'd probably put a restraining order on you.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel at this point I'm like all my attempts to edit in footage on my Blu-ray copy, which doesn't seem to work because I keep putting it in my iMac and it's not working. But footage of him ripping off his own ding-dong.
Now, until Brian Yuzna weighs in on this.
I think that's the real key, is Brian Yuzna, I think, is a little more in touch with the material.
I just like the calm, like equanimity that, like, Stuart Gordon just, like, responds no to this question. I don't know. I mean, to me, it suggests that the idea...
There's no wiggle room there.
Like,
no, not at all.
Like the way a ding-dong would wiggle.
Not even enough room for a ding-dong to wiggle in.
The fact that he's not surprised suggests to me...
There was no
me,
what? Of course not.
Like, I feel like this is already filtered to him somehow.
I hope so. Much the same way that I hope Alan Ruck knows that we were talking about him before.
Yeah.
Although sure. I doubt it.
But now is the part in the movie, or in the movie. Now is the part in the movie.
We're in a movie?
What's going on?
Now is the part in the movie where the male and female leads get back together after having a misunderstanding earlier on. And it's also the part in the podcast where we recommend a movie that we like.
Sure. It's the part in the movie where we recommend a podcast. So I'm going to say 99% Invisible, and then I'm going to go on a car chase.
Yeah, and I'm going to say My Brother, and Me.
And I'm going to say, what's a podcast?
Oh, boy. Here we go again. Freeze frame, credits roll.
It's going to be a long grandpa.
You've been imagining that I've been taping these and putting them in a time capsule.
Sure. Like Prince.
Yeah, why are you looking at me?
Sorry.
You both started looking at me like this was the moment where it turns out you're both cannibals that tricked me here, and now you're looking at me and just seeing a giant turkey leg.
It's what we call a malign paradigm shift, Elliot. It's when you realize all the other travelers at the inn you're staying in are actually vampires. Werewolves.
It's what
not vampires, it's we're talking lycans.
Kind of thing that would happen in a Michael Haneke film.
I was looking at you.
8 days of great movies.
Because why don't you recommend a movie?
Okay. The movie I'd like to recommend is a film I just saw recently, and I really enjoyed it. It's called Intimate Lighting, which sounds like it's a softcore pornography film, but it's not. It's actually a Czech New Wave film, and I found over the years that I really like the films from the Czech New Wave movement of the 60s. They're like usually pretty down-to-earth, like kind of funny, but not like goofy silly, just kind of like either black comedy, deadpan, or kind of offbeat, quirky movies that move at their own pace and are shot usually in a kind of natural way, and the acting is very natural. I really like them a lot. And so this is one I hadn't seen before, but it's directed by Ivan Pastor, who's best known for like Cutter's Way, and he directed Creator. But this was, I think it was his first film, and it's from 1965, and it's... Yeah.
Everyone remembers Creator with Peter O'Toole and Mariel Hemingway.
I'm guessing that a lot of people listening to the Flophouse know what Creator is. Right. You know, or maybe they like, well, come on, the guy has no movies that are more famous than Cutter's Way or Creator. Sure. So, but that I know of. But this, I think, was his first movie, and it's a short, tight little movie about two musicians. One is a guy in this kind of smallish town who's married and has a family. And works with a local band orchestra that's mainly amateurs. And an old friend of his that he used to play with, who is a single guy with this beautiful, sexy girlfriend who plays in the city, comes to visit him so that they can both play at a concert together. And the movie is really just the two of them interacting after what seems like a long time apart and getting to know each other and kind of feeling out this new dynamic where in some ways are both living the life the other one would have liked to have, or at least the family man envies the single guy quite a bit. But at the same time, there's a lot of like local characters and just kind of, you know, like quirky situations. They go to a funeral that they play music at that goes on for a very long time and they can't seem to leave. And there's a late night conversation between the two of them where they decide to go around the house listening to how the rest of their family members sound when they're snoring. And there's like, it just captured very well this feeling of like these two guys who used to be friends, they didn't have a falling out, but they've changed. And there's something melancholy about that, but there's also something funny about that. So I really enjoyed it a lot. Intimate Lighting, I'll call it. Because that's the title.
Yeah. I'd like to recommend a movie I saw just last night called The Guest, directed by Adam Wingard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're Next guy. Now, you better keep the shit light on spoilers, dude.
Yeah, he did You're Next, which I liked a lot, but I think that The Guest is actually a huge leap forward for him.
Okay, I'm going to put my fingers in my ears, so okay. Just...
There's not going to be spoilers, but... I saw what was an advanced screening at the time. It should be out by the time this podcast comes out. The director was there. The writer was there. The star, Dan Stevens, was there, who played Matthew Crowley on Downton Abbey, but has slimmed down and bulked up and has gotten super fucking buff.
You can't do both of those. You can't slim down and bulk up.
You can when it's muscle. You put on pure muscle, Elliot.
Yeah.
That's bulk.
This is a movie that they expressly described afterwards as the Terminator meets Halloween, and you can see that. Like, it is, you can totally see that, but it's also its own thing. But it's a film.
So, like, the Terminator puts a costume together and goes trick or treating?
Yeah.
The costume looks like William Shatner.
Dan Stevens plays a mysterious army guy who shows up at the house of, again, Stuart, I'm just saying anything that you would see in any review. I'm not going to get into spoilers.
He hasn't been reading the reviews.
So Dan Stevens shows up as an army guy who was the friend of the dead son of this family, and he ingratiates himself into this family, but there's something a little off about him, and violence seems to follow him around, and it's a movie that totally, like, that seems to have cracked the code of how to be equal parts action film, horror film, and comedy without anything, like, overwhelming anything else. And it's also one of these movies that is done in the style of sort of an older exploitation style. Like, it joins Drive or House of the Devil in feeling like it's straight out of the 80s, but it doesn't feel like a pastiche or throwback. It feels like it's just using that style.
Or that it's trying too hard.
Yeah. I mean, like, it just feels like some, like, weird amalgam of John Carpenter and James Cameron and, like, some, like, offbeat comedy film just, like, fell through a time warp and it showed up and it's awesome. Like, and it's just like, it's a movie that only exists to be entertaining. It has a great score.
Like a Check Your Brain at the Door.
But no. I mean, it's a smart movie that just only wants to make you feel happy. And especially if you grew up with the type of movies that I think Stuart and Elliot and I grew up enjoying, like, it'll hit that sweet spot for
Disney
you.
Disney movies.
But it also, like,
pornos.
But it also really worked for my wife went and saw it with me, too. And she doesn't necessarily give a shit about, like, John Carpenter movies or love super violent stuff. But she really liked this movie. In no small part, probably, because Dan Stevens is so charming in it. Even though he's a total sociopath in the movie, he is also totally hot and funny.
Bulked up and slimmed down.
Yeah.
Yep. Bulked down and slimmed up.
I just really, really liked The Guest.
Yeah. I can't wait to see it.
So, Stu, what do you
wish I could have seen it with you. I have a relatively quick recommendation. I'm going to recommend a total psychological mind bender.
Whoa.
A real thriller of a movie. I'm going to recommend
called Talking Cat.
It will break you down. Now, I am going to recommend the movie Enemy from last year. Directed by a guy, I'm assuming French-Canadian guy, whose name I'm not going to try and pronounce, the guy who directed...
it's pronounced French-Canadian.
that gentleman who directed Prisoners, another movie I recommended. A movie I recommended in large part because of the atmosphere. I mean...
not necessarily such a great...
Not a great story.
Story, yeah, but, no, but the acting and the directing is good.
Yeah. So this movie kind of carries that on. It's kind of a passion project for his, a passion project that he kind of made using the credibility he got from Prisoners. Mm-hmm. And it does feature Jake Gyllenhaal. So if you like Jake Gyllenhaal, this movie features a metric fuck ton of Jake Gyllenhaal.
You'll get your fill-in-hall of Gyllenhaal.
Thanks, Dan. I'm not going to go.
Oh, right, because you're terrible.
I'm not going to go too into the plot of the movie. It's a movie that I feel is going to either get a 1-star or a 10-star review from folks.
A real Only God Forgives.
Yeah, in a way, I feel like it is to Prisoners what Only God Forgives is to Drive. Mm. So it carries on a lot of the same atmosphere that you get out of Prisoners and some great performances, but it makes it, you know, it's a little bit out there, I guess. Or if you'll watch it, you'll be like, this is total garbage. I hate this. Stuart's a moron, which is possible. So three solid recommendations.
Some contentious recommendations. Stuart seemed to lose faith in his own recommendation about halfway through.
I think it's great, but I'll understand if you don't.
I can understand.
It's kind of like Prometheus.
Yeah, I've felt that way about movies I recommended where it's like, I love this, but I totally get why someone else would hate this.
Yeah. But I'm
not going to fight you, bro, if you don't like it.
Exactly.
Sure. We can still be blood brothers.
Look, Stewart's confidence and self-esteem are not resting on whether you like this fucking movie, okay?
Yeah.
So just back off.
Eat a dick.
That said, though,
but
I mean,
just one, because that's all you're worth.
I've often...
Wow.
Roasted. That's for grandmas in the audience.
I've often found that when choosing a movie, like the most interesting movies that I've seen have often been ones that super split critics. Like, you get people who absolutely adore it or hate it the most. And that means that the movie's interesting.
Going back to the earlier letter on the episode about talking about the middle ground versus the outliers.
It's true. But every now and then there is a movie that everybody loves. Like,
what
Toy
a
Story
solid
3.
Episode of the podcast.
It's not like, oh, everybody loves that movie. It must be a piece of crap. No, it's beautiful.
Yeah. I enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy like everyone else in the fucking known universe.
Still haven't gotten to see it.
Yeah, because you're a human and you like things
I've
that touch.
I've got two ears and a heart, as Alec Baldwin said on 30 Rock.
But I feel like Snowpiercer on some level was that way. Like a lot of people were kind of divided on that.
People could either buy into it and love it, or they just couldn't buy into it.
And the people that didn't like it just didn't seem to post on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. So that's why it has such
and
a good score.
10 wormy boners.
10. They don't merit 10 of those because Snowpiercer's not that bad.
Well, no, it's only because that's what those nutrient bars are made out of.
Wormy boners?
They grind
delicious.
Up wormy boners.
Yeah.
Now, Elliot, what do those look like? I think that's the key question.
Oh, boy. Well, let me just mention.
Nutrient bars, I mean.
Oh! Let's get out of here.
Anyway, another small timber comes to an end.
Small vember.
Sure.
As if there was ever another.
As the elders sit around the hearth thousands of years from now, they'll be telling the younglings about the first small timber.
The most recent small timber.
As it has for ages uncounted and millennia untold, man put small timber to rest in its cask of ancient winters, not to be reopened for another year. Ah, the dance of small vember has gone on for more lifetimes
upon the rise
than a man
of the harvest
count.
Moon.
It would take two more fingers than all the living men combined possess to count the years of small timber.
But
some say small timber predates humanity itself, that the angels brought it down from heaven.
But beware the howling of the winter wolf, for that means that Shocktober is on the horizon, and now, small vember shall rest in a shallow grave.
They say Shocktober is the curse visited upon humanity for his hubris.
Shocktober is the worst month.
That's
for a year that has a Shocktober, it pushes those two things together.
That's only leap years. All right, well,
I heard a story of a man who saw a Shocktober once, but who could believe him? Such a thing would be an abomination.
All right.
Stop telling us about Shocktober, old man. It's just an old wives' tale. I saw it, I swear. A small timber and a Shocktober had a baby.
Go up to that old cabin, you'll see a Shocktober.
They said it couldn't
Whatever.
Survive
we're
in this world.
We're going to have a party up there.
We're going to drink and have sex and probably push
topless.
Someone in a lake.
Put something in a hole. Right. Well,
you'll see my followers.
Shocktober holds the lake sacred.
Okay, well, we gotta close the door on this thing sometime.
Leave not your used condoms around Shocktober's altar, or a horrid curse ye shall be given.
He doesn't agree with normal style birth control.
All right,
normal style.
For the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
You see, a Shocktober is sterile.
What's a Shocktober? A Shocktober hole is
a
mighty beast.
A Shocktober can mate, but the Shocktober is sterile.
You know, and Elliot's the one who's always talking about getting home to his baby, and yet he drags out the finish.
So
I've been Dan McCoy.
That passive aggressive response was from Dan McCoy. I'm Stuart Wellington,
and I am shamed and apologetic, Elliot Kalin.
Okay.
Good night, everyone.
Small vember.
No, timber. Timber.
Vember.
A proper cup of coffee from a proper copper coffee pot.
Topeka Bodega.
Doing it and doing it and doing it well.
What's your man got to do with me?
I've got a man.
I ain't trying to hear that, see?
Right. Makes me want to shoop a dupe. Shoop a dupe, a dupe, a dupe.
They took my rings. They took my Rolex. I looked at my homies and said, damn, what's next?
Regulators round up. It was a clear black night, a bright white moon.